Before we start with today's episode, please consider donating to one of the many, 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 many organizations and individuals who are working on grounds currently in Beirut in Lebanon, where, as you may know, 2 weeks ago, there was a huge explosion caused by mismanagement of the government. And many, many, many citizens are trying to rebuild because the government has proven to be incompetent. So please, please, please consider donating whatever you can to the Lebanese Red Cross. There's a Lebanese food bank. There's Hammam Radio, and so many more that you can find online. I will try to link some on our Instagram page. Yes, that's all I wanted to say. Let's get into the episode. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of 10 and 10. Thank you again so much for joining me this week. I am absolutely sorry for the very long absence. Things have been crazy. I am preparing to move to another country during a pandemic, so it's been a bit stressful, as you might imagine. But we're back. We're back, and hopefully there will be no more long interruptions. And this week, I want to talk about something that has been on my mind for some time now, but I didn't get the chance to talk about it until now, which is very, very specific to Belgium. So if you do not live in Belgium, you probably haven't heard about this case, but quite recently, actually, I think end of last month, beginning of this month, there has been a resurgence in a very specific fraternity case from 2 years ago. Basically what happened was that a fraternity called Roizegom, I think that's how you pronounce, I cannot pronounce Flemish things. Anyway, so, a fraternity called Roizegom, the fraternities here in Belgium have like initiation rites, and I think it's the same in the US, but Belgian fraternities are known for overstepping their limits, and what happened in this particular case 2 years ago in December, I think it was, if I remember correctly, Sanda Dia, one of the new recruits, the newcomers, he died from the consequences of this initiation ritual. I will spare you the exact detailed encounter. You can find them online if you search for Sanda Dia. To just describe some of the things that happened that, you know, caused his death. There was a lot of drinking involved, of course. That's what always happens here. He had to drink not only alcohol, but also fish sauce, which caused a swelling in the brain. He and two other newcomers, they didn't have to dig their own grave. I mean, basically he dug his own grave, but it's very morbid. They had to basically dig a hole and stand in freezing water, and that's when he basically collapsed. There was times when the newcomers were passed out and people were peeing on them and shitting on them as well. And it was all just very brutal and torturous. There was more, but I think my brain has effectively tried to protect me from the mental image of it, so I have not the exact rundown, but anyway, so this is basically what happened. There was this young man who wanted to join a fraternity. The fraternity ritual got out of hand and he died, and for a lot of people in Belgium, there has been this discussion if it was murder or not. I personally believe it's at least third degree murder, because I don't think the intention was to kill. But the members of Reuzegam, they knew what they were doing, and what they were doing was inhumane and unacceptable. And it was, it also, at least it was torture. And so I, for me personally, if someone dies from torture, you have the intent of harming them. So you could even call it second degree murder, you know? Anyway, so there was a lot of discussion about this, especially also because the people who were involved didn't really get any, they weren't prosecuted properly. There is still, the family is still trying to get a just ruling on the case, but so far there was not really any type of disciplinary measure or anything. They had to, they got, I think three people, if I remember correctly, three people got got 30 hours of community work, and they had to write an essay on what they did wrong. And two of those people were also two of the newcomers who had literally, they couldn't do anything about it. Like, there were, I mean, of course everyone could have done something about it, but they were also victims of the torture. So why would you? Anyway, they also had to eat a life, like a fish, a goldfish alive. It was, I read the account and I remember I just had shudders all over my body. I am, in this episode, I don't really want to talk about the fraternity itself, because I think a lot of other people already did that and did it very well. And there is a huge problem that has still not been addressed in Belgium in general, not only at our university, but at other universities as well. And that is the problem with fraternities and how their rituals are always over the top, and every single year there is a case where something goes really bad. And this is only the cases that we know of. Like, I have heard of someone in Ghent, a girl being tied to a tree overnight, and she got raped multiple times. There was another guy who also died from drinking too much fish sauce. So this happens every year, and like, there is so much wrong. Like, I really don't like the fraternities. That's my personal standpoint on this. And I think I could make a whole other episode on criticizing them. But what I actually want to criticize, or who I want to address in this episode, is KU Leuven, the university that the fraternity was associated with. Because our lovely rector, he decided to send an email. Now, I'm not a student anymore. I am an alumnus. So, but the email is also addressed to alumni. So I took the freedom to comment on it. Because I think that the university has a responsibility to set an example. And the problem is, and I will come back to this later as well, but the problem is that the reason why this keeps happening with so many fraternities is that there is never any real disciplinary measures. Like, they get like maybe a small, you know, a hit on the hand, and then that's it. There is not really any real consequences, which is why fucked up shit like this happens every single year. And again, not only at KU Leuven, but at other universities in Belgium as well. Anyway, so the rector decided to send an email at the beginning of this month, which is very interesting, because this happened December 2018, right? I do not remember getting an email at that time. Maybe I don't remember correctly. I might have forgotten. But I think I would remember an incident like this. But anyway, either way, this email is also still, even if this is a follow-up email to what happens, because now it's resurfacing because of the trial, etc. And even then it is too late, because when the trial started happening, the outrage on the internet, I mean, or on social media platforms, like when students started speaking out, was last month. And like beginning of July, I remember, or mid-July, and this email was from the 6th of August, so that is also very interesting. Anyway, it reads, so the subject is "To the Core of What We Stand For," which is great title, by the way. I'm going to try to be less sarcastic throughout this email, but it's very hard because, oh boy, you will see. Anyway, so it says, "Dear colleagues, dear prospective students, dear alumni, dear parents, friends, sympathizers, over the past few months, I have addressed you regularly because Kai Leuven had to reinvent itself at a very short notice due to the pandemic." Which, why would you, like, okay. "I have repeatedly asked you, urged you to support each other, take good care of yourself and each other. Today, I'm writing to you because we also need this care and support in light of Senda Diaz's horrific death." Which, you know, at least we can, glad that we can admit that it was horrific, because it was absolutely, it was just, it's worse than a horror movie. I am not kidding. Which is why I am not reading out loud what happened, but it was really bad. But again, as I said, I would not call this a death. For me, this is murder. This is murder. Like, again, as I said, you know, like, maybe, fair enough, we might not call it first degree murder, because maybe there wasn't the intention of killing him. Like, you know, I think legally speaking, there has to be, like, a planning of the murder. And I'm assuming and hoping that the fraternity had no intention of killing Sanda, and it wasn't premeditated. But again, at least say third degree murder. It's murder. It's not, he didn't die, like, you know, just like that. There was a lot of things going on that led up to his death, which were in the control of other people. Anyway, he says, he goes on, "Senda's death forces us to go back to the core of what we stand for and reinvent this if necessary." Clearly something is wrong here. Why is there an if? I don't understand. Okay. And now there is a title. It says Dark Page. And he goes on to say, "I previously wrote that the Reusagam student initiation ritual is and always will be the darkest page in my 3-year history as rector. I want to add that it also belongs to the darkest pages in the history of our university. Nobody can fathom how a group of young adult men can proceed with actions that conjure up images of torture." Again, I'm glad that, like, he mentions it, at least, that it was torture. But there's two things I need to stop and say here. Is, why was this fraternity allowed to continue to exist when it was known to do this kind of shit for the last 10 years? Like, people knew that this fraternity's rituals were like this all of the time. Why were they allowed to be on campus? Like, that, it should not be the case. And, like, if it's so horrible... If it was so horrible, why are these students... Because we know who was involved. You know, like, we know who was involved. They're very secretive. The society is very secretive. So they weren't released to the public. But I'm sure that the university knows who belongs to the group, you know, to the fraternity. And why are they allowed to still be there? Because there was, again, no disciplinary measure from the... Not really, like, they had to write an essay. You know what I mean? Like, there was no consequences for them on campus. So, anyway. "Nobody can grasp the total lack of moral principles, the cowardice, the haughtiness, the desire to humiliate to death, the total absence of a sense of human dignity is downright repugnant." It's also frightening. Yeah, okay. I'm like, he's using all of these words, but they don't basically mean anything, because director hasn't showed us that this is actually how he thinks. Anyway, after this tragedy at the beginning of 2019, we put an end to the student initiation rituals as acts of humiliation. The charter for student initiation rituals that had already been drawn up with Leuven partners, the police, the university colleges, and the recognized student associations was immediately tightened. Huh? Like, what? Anyway, at the time, we made sure that after years of bickering with elusive clubs, they too accepted the charter. Because they understand that they are all students of institutions where they promise to uphold the highest standards of respect for the human person in their conduct. Okay, multiple problems with this. 2019? Why was this only done in 2019? Why was it okay to do these things before? Like, why was it okay to let fraternities run wild until then? Like, why? Like, people have died before. People have been physically harmed before. Like, why is... not only at this university, but why exactly weren't they forced to sign this charter before? Like, why in 2009? That's way too late. That is way too late. That is a... this shouldn't have been a reaction to the death. It should have been a preliminary... like, this should have happened before, so... what happened to Sanadia wouldn't have happened. Yeah, like, who in their right minds lets this happen on their university grounds? Anyway, or, like, even, like, okay, you're saying there's the highest standards of respect for the human person. But how is this represented if you knowingly let other, like, let student organizations do this? Like, this is not a secret, guys. Like, this is because it is tradition. People know how fucked up the rituals are. That's not a secret. People know. So the fact that they have waited until that time is shocking to me. This is not only the current rector's fault. I'm also addressing every rector before that who didn't do that. Like, what is wrong with you? Why did it have to come to that? Anyway, he goes on, but today we have to take one step further. You don't think so? The image of a crawling procession of soiled young adults is no longer appropriate to the present time. Okay. In essence, an initiation ritual is a welcome. You are assigned a godfather and a godmother and you become part of the community. An initiation ritual has to be an act of support for a newcomer, which is the complete opposite of the kind of alpha performance it has become today. Going from our tradition, we understand this only too well. I don't even know what that means. Okay. I therefore call upon all associations and student representatives across the boundaries of universities and university colleges to help us think of other initiatives that can contribute to inclusion, to proper support during a period in which so many students are struggling with isolation and mental health. Sometimes we reach a point where we have to be strong enough to break with tradition. This too is reinventing yourself. Like, what even? That is just blabber to make the reader feel better, I guess. I don't, like, what does that mean? Give me concrete solutions. Don't just say words. And also, you think you have to break with tradition? I think so too. At least we're agreeing on that. Anyway, next chapter title is A Strong University. When I heard the news in December 2018, it grabbed me by the throat. That first message about an initiation ritual gone awry. Anyway, again, side note, this is not the first initiation that has gone wrong. This happens every year. I get that he obviously was also affected by this. He's human, but I'm also like, we should have seen, like, it's not like nobody saw this coming, you know what I mean? Anyway, okay. So now he's making us sympathize with him. He says, the chill and the tears were when someone came to tell me far away from home at the Belgian embassy in Tokyo that Sanda didn't make it. The image of distraught friends at the funeral, the telling silence during the conversation with the family. Again, I understand that, you know, like, I get it. And I'm not saying that these emotions or the text is, you know, fake or, like, not authentic or anything. But I'm just like, this is not, I don't know, I feel like it's not appropriate for the measures that have been taken, but we will get to that in a bit. The recent reconstruction of the facts has grabbed me by the throat in the same way. This time, too, there was a chill. There were tears. Okay. Someone has lost their son. Someone had to bury their child because the university couldn't make sure that the organizations that are associated with the university are actually, upholding human rights. And this has been going, this is so preventable. And I don't find it right that, again, I'm not saying that these emotions are fake, because obviously I think all of us have felt the same way. Like, we were all saddened and horrified. But this is not, what am I supposed to feel bad for the rector? Like, boohoo, like, you know what I mean? I'm just, anyway. Of course, I fully understand that anyone who takes the current new information as a basis will find the decisions that we made at the time lenient, weak, or wrong. And yes, I have learned much from various opinions and reactions these past days. They have shown me sides to the story that I wasn't sufficiently aware of. They strengthen me in what I'm trying to do. I'm certain of that. They make us better at what Kyle Leuven stands for. Thank you for this to all who have helped guide me and spoken to me about this with sincere concern. Okay. Wait, this is very important, because later on in the letter, he says that there has been opinion makers, and they're, you know, like, he doesn't find it right that, you know, people are dragging down university or something. And I'm like, but okay. Anyway, I don't know. It doesn't seem very, this thank you doesn't seem very, this is the only thing that doesn't seem very sincere of this text in this paragraph. And anyway, just wait for it. So he goes on, at the same time, I ask you not to let go of your pride in our university. I feel ashamed. Honestly, I feel ashamed. But anyway, those who are not well-intentioned towards the university today abuse this dark page to portray Kyle Leuven as an elitist power block of white people. Okay, I need to address this, because first of all, I have not seen one person saying that about the university. They said that about the fraternity. And the people who stand behind the fraternity, because it's true. But I have not seen one person being like, oh, the university is white and elitist, because the engineering program is 80% like Southeast Asian. And like it doesn't make sense to, you know what I mean? I mean, obviously that doesn't say anything, because still the university, or at least my faculty, was not very welcoming to foreign students. You know, that's a whole other topic. But I'm just, he just said two sentences ago that he thank you for those to all who have helped guide me and spoken to me about this with sincere concern. This is also a concern. Like, if the fraternity is using their, because a lot, this was one of the critiques I saw online, the fraternity is mostly made up of rich white people in Belgium, and most of them, like, one mother, for example, of the perpetrators is a judge in Antwerp, which is where the jurisdiction would fall if the court in Leuven overturns it and the Sanda's family decides to, you know, challenge that decision. So, like, yeah, that's a legitimate criticism. That's a legitimate criticism, though. Like, anyway, he goes on. I know we still have a long way to go, and the same is true for a society we are all part of. I know we need to further strengthen our work on inclusion, diversity, and anti-discrimination. Then do it. That we need to make quicker work of the review of disciplinary procedures and codes of conduct that was started last year. The many reactions of the past few days strengthen this ambition. But the image that is being created today? No, I do not agree with that. And I ask you all to do the same, loudly and clearly. We are a university that learns from its mistakes every single day. Okay. He has not given me one good reason to be loud and clearly proud of my university. Like, so far, I have not seen anything that shows me that I should be. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, why is he asking us to do that? And I wonder, he says, we are a university that learns from its mistakes every single day. Why did it take so long to create a new charter then and to make every fraternity sign it? Like, it doesn't make any... Anyway. We are a democratic organization, one of the few in our society that chooses its leader and that insists on collegial governance. We are open to society and in close cooperation with the association colleges, realize a network of opportunities. We see it as our mission to put our research and education at the service of society with special attention to those who are most vulnerable. No, this is not some sterile text. This is our mission statement. This mission is a living one. Many of you make it a reality every day. I want to remind you of the speech I delivered at the opening of this academic year. He linked his speech, by the way, which I find very funny. Anyway, I talked about the unique position of KU Leuven as one of the world's leading research universities. Unique because unlike the universities that we measure ourselves against and compare ourselves with, KU Leuven starts from excellence by inclusion and broad accessibility. We don't do so because society tells us to. We do so because we are convinced that we can only make a truly excellent contribution to a better society if broad sections of the population are involved in and profit from our science. Okay, so... because you're not elitist, you deserve special recognition. Like, what does this have to do with the case? Is this only because people saw because they mentioned the white privilege thing? Because that's still true. It is still true that the people who are involved in this case have white privilege. Like, someone died and you're fishing for cookies. Like, for, you know what I mean? Like, why? No school should be elitist. That should be, like, the basic, you know, like, the basis of everything. And I get that the rank, KU Leuven's ranking is quite high in the world for its research. But that does not mean that what happened is still not bad. Like, that has nothing to do, like, the crit, I think he didn't really get the criticism of the white power thing. But okay. Anyway, he goes on. Yes, we have work to do. Yes, I take up the gauntlet and invite you all to do the same, because this is not just the rector's mission. This is an assignment for each of us, students, alumni, professors, researchers, staff members. We have to make it a reality in how we interact with each other, in our intention to personal societal growth, and what we emphasize in our research, and a societal commitment that drives us. I know that's probably not what he meant, but this paragraph to me sounds like everyone has to do equal work. Again, you know, and like I get it, but I'm like, if this whole thing is about, like, the way that I interpret it is that it's about the whole power block of white people thing that he mentioned. So it's about racism, right? So is he really saying that he expects equal work against racism from minorities as well as white people? I mean, that's not how it should be, but okay. Anyway, and he says, you will see, we will come out stronger in the end, sooner rather than later, but don't forget, being proud of what we do so well is the best foundation to do what we're good at even better. Alrighty then. And then next title is Forgiveness and Punishment. May I throw a very difficult question at you? Go ahead. He goes on, I present it to you because it has guided our approach in the wake of those gruesome events. Here it comes. All justified disapproval and understandable sense of horror aside, how can we stay connected with the accused as human beings who have the potential for growth and are worthy of forgiveness? Okay, first of all, this is not a difficult question. But he goes on to say, I realize that the university and society are not quite ready for and with these questions. And I think it's only you, sir. Like, I honestly don't think this is a difficult question. I don't... if they would show remorse and they would show effort to stand up to what they did, they need to earn the fact that we want to stay connected to them and that they are worthy of forgiveness. They need to show us, they need to show society and university and everyone else that they deserve that by owning up to their mistake, showing remorse, but there is no such thing happening. So why are we the ones that have to be the bigger person when they have literally killed someone? It makes no sense to me to say like, oh, you know, they're human beings and they have the potential for growth and they're worthy of forgiveness. Like, no, they're not worthy of forgiveness if they actually cleaned the crime scenes. So they know they did something wrong and still decided to do the wrong thing again. And you cannot talk to me about forgiveness if someone is not even admitting to the crime that they have committed. If they haven't apologized, they have not apologized to the family, there was no justice at all. And I'm not saying this only from the juridical side. I'm saying this also from the individuals who were involved. The fact that they tempered with evidence, that they cleaned up evidence, because they know they're guilty. But they are not showing any remorse or change in character. They are not stepping forward to say like, yeah, we fucked up and the punish, like, we deserve punishment, and, you know, because we did something wrong. That's how society works. That's how the juridical system is supposed to work. And then they earn their place back in society through that, through justice, not through this. You don't give someone a cookie when they did something wrong in the hopes of them not doing the wrong thing again. Like, that's not... No. I am so mad at this part, because the fact that he believes that this is a difficult question and that he believes it's okay to ask us for forgiveness of what happened, to ask Sanda's family, basically his friends who were also at the university, for forgiveness of what happened, even though the perpetrators have not owned up to their wrongdoings, is absolutely ridiculous to me. Like, that is low. That's the thing that bothers me. Everything else is debatable. I'm sure that he tried his best in writing this email, but this part, I am mad, because that is not okay. If someone... There is... Someone died! Like, I don't understand how this is... So hard to understand. Anyway, I'm gonna go on, because otherwise this part is gonna be way too long. He goes on, and I want you to know that I struggle with them myself as well. Bro, how do you struggle with this? Again, these people have not shown any effort in, you know, what's it called? To redeem themselves? Like, they didn't do anything. They did the complete opposite of that. Why? Anyway. But in my capacity as rector, and based on our mission to be a critical voice in society, I have to ask you this question. No, working on forgiveness does not mean that they won't get punished. They haven't gotten punished, though. Nor does it exclude a more severe sanction. These two elements can and must go together. But where is it, though? Where is it? Because, you know, the problem is that there was no consequences from the university side. So again, and this is important, because I will go back to the regulations on campus that we were referring to and that do require sanctions. The thing is, he goes back later in this letter to the right of education, and that you cannot deprive someone of the right to education just because of something, you know, that they did, because it's not within his juridical power or whatever. But I'm just like, if a student disrespects a human life like this, why is their right to education more important than the right to human dignity and life of the other person that died at their hands? You know, like, why would it? Sure, they still have a right to education, but maybe universities shouldn't let murderers study at their university. Same thing happened, like, not same thing happened, but a similar thing happened, I think, 2 years ago or 1 year ago. The University of Ghent suspended a student because they were a neo-Nazi. And then Kaj Leuven was like, yeah, you can study at our place. Like, why is Kaj Leuven so okay with immoral standards, like when we're actually supposed to be upholding moral standards. Anyway, I have not seen a punishment. I don't have seen any sanctions. And that's exactly the reason also why this shit continues to happen, because there's no consequences for the perpetrators. Anyway, he goes on. These two, blah, blah. Because yes, we suspected from day one that we're dealing with potentially criminal acts. But we could not and were not allowed to investigate them. Okay, no one asked you to. No visit to the crime scenes. We didn't have the resources to determine who was to blame and whether there were differences in degree of guilt. Okay. There, you have resources to, you know, there was people, like, there was actually someone from the faculty who witnessed some of the students there. It's not that hard to identify students from your own university, you know? Anyway. That is why we rely so much on the power and ability of the institution that was created for this very purpose, the judiciary, to avoid jeopardizing the judicial process. We have limited ourselves in determining the sanction so that to what we know for certain, that each of those involved had taken part in an inhumane activity. And why? Okay, if this is what you are certain about, why are they not properly sanctioned, though? Why, again, why is their right to education more important than someone else's human life and dignity? Like, I don't understand. And two people who were part of the initiation ritual are still alive, and they know, like they can identify the people. It's not like, anyway, and they have to live with that, with those people. They have to go, like, they still have to see those perpetrators. They have to see, they have to go to the same buildings without, you don't think that they will intimidate them or, like, do something bad to them again? Like, what is, anyway. He goes on. I have made that clear in opinion pieces. Furthermore, the university has adopted an approach based on the difficult quest for meaning and restoration, an approach that requires courage. All I see right now is cowardice, but okay. For example, there have been numerous individual and group conversations with the members of Roizigam. Wow. Action has been taken regarding the clubs, and there have been many consultations with the student societies. Clear messages have been sent to the policymakers, ourselves in other words, and some professors have discussed the matter in their classes. That is not a lax or weak approach, but one that complements the role of the official judiciary system. This is not complement to the judiciary system. This is bullshit. I'm sorry, but this is bullshit. Like, you had conversations, and the only action I have seen been taken is the charter, which was way too late. And anyway. Almost there. Next chapter title, the essence of discipline. This brings me to the essence of disciplinary measures. Our disciplinary procedures does not exist to investigate crimes, to prosecute, and to convict. Quite a few opinion makers do not make that distinction sufficiently, and in fact call on the university to take judicial power and to immediately deprive those involved of their right to education. But a rector is no judge. There it is. There it is. Alrighty. This is the second thing that I'm very mad about. And it goes back to the thing that I said before. No one asks you to investigate a crime or prosecute them. The only thing that has been asked for is for the suspension of the students who were involved in the murder of Sanadia and the torture of the other two. The other two newcomers, because that's what you should do. Like, it is within your, okay, a rector obviously also has to, of course they judge things, it's not, maybe it's not a court, but the rector has to make decisions and judge individual cases, whether that's deciding if someone, you know, is allowed to continue studying even though maybe they haven't met all the standard criteria to study. For example, friends of mine, they had to appeal to stay at the university because they, you know, they didn't pass enough courses. And then the rector also decides, or the vice rector decides. And that's not judging, that's also judging. So why suddenly does the rector not have the power to judge someone else's actions on their own very campus, to their own very students? Like something that has happened to another student from the university, and like by your own students, like, you know, like you're, of course you can make, you of course have judicial power within the university. Like, why does this, I'm blown by this part of the text, because you remember in the beginning when he said you don't have to agree with me, and then he goes on to say, like, he says opinion makers, like, what are you, like, are you trying to drag someone for speaking out about the fact that what the university is doing is wrong? Because it is. Like, it's not sufficient. It's clearly not sufficient. And, like, if someone is acting out of order, why do they still have a right to education? Please tell me why. If someone explain to me why that's okay. Anyway, I talked about this before, so I'm not going to go more into it, but this made me really mad, because of course, as a rector, I think the role of a rector is also to show what our moral standards are at the university. What is our standard of model students? Like, what kind of morals and ethics do we want to represent in the university? And so if someone is acting out of order, there is supposed to be adequate measures against that. And this, I think this is the highest form of disrespect to human life. So why, again, I'm saying, why are these people allowed to continue to study peacefully at this university if we're supposedly such a, you know, high upholding standard university? Like, I don't see it. Anyway, he goes on. Nor is discipline about exclusion. Discipline is essentially about inclusion. I know that this may sound strange, but it's true. It's about what we can and should do to be able to reintegrate members of our community who make a mistake. And yes, it's also about setting the boundaries that, when crossed, justify the temporary exclusion from that community. How have these individuals earned that inclusion again, though? They have not shown any, again, no remorse. They have not stand up to their, they haven't owned their mistakes. When a mistake is made, someone, of course, has to, like, but this is not a mistake. A mistake happens by accident. This was not accidental. Someone who plans the torture of people for hours. This happened over 2 days, by the way. 2 days these people were tortured. This is not a mistake. This is clear action. And you expect us to reintegrate these, like, quote-unquote, reintegrate these members of the community without them even, like, standing up to the faults that they did, the wrongdoings. It was not a mistake, because it was intentional. They knew what they were doing, and they were doing it over 40, like, I think 36 hours. That is not a mistake. That is clear action. And the fact that the university is trying to, like, make it sound like, oh, like, they didn't mean it. Like, that is ridiculous. That is ridiculous. And you cannot tell me, it really pisses me off, that they get to be included just because they were already students at the university. Like, fuck that. I'm sorry for my language, but fuck that. That is not okay. They haven't shown any signs to be worthy of reinclusion, as if they were ever casted out. They were not. So, anyway, going on in the letter, The latter is indeed a conceivable option. No, the members of Reusigam who were involved cannot remain at our university under all circumstances. After all, what message would that send to all students and colleagues? That the outcome of the investigation and decision of the criminal court don't matter at all? Of course, it matters, but we need to know what it is first. Okay. Like, there is a detailed report in multiple newspapers. And you're still telling me that you need to wait for the court out? Like, okay. Before we take such big decisions and exclude someone from our institution, I want to have crystal clear information and a proper insight into how the court assesses individual responsibility. Our mission as a university is precisely to provide education and training to those who need it the most. That is not a mission to treat lightly. Fuck that. Anyway. Next title, which is the last one, says support. You don't have to agree with me. Funny that you should say that, because he also says you're allowed to have a different opinion and express it. But then he was saying again, like, the opinion makers. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm very bitter about this. You don't have to stand by your rector, although the numerous expressions of support are what have kept me going the past couple of days. Fuck that. What I'm asking from you, however, is to support the university. No. No. Why would I support the university if they can't respect human life? What the fuck? Support it in fulfilling its mission and stepping up its ambitions. Support each other. Above all, support Sanda's family and friends. Sanda, a young man loved and gifted who has been taken from them. A young man who has been taken from our university community. Kind regards. Like, what the actual... this is... this letter just makes me want to scream. Because how... Okay, I understand. I can kind of understand that, you know... We're waiting for the court to to have all facts and blah, blah, blah. But the facts are already there. Like, journalists have done the job of doing the research and putting it out there. And it's not like it's opinion making or anything. It's very factual. Like, they were just literally hour for hour describe what happens. And why does there, you know... Why does there still have to be quote-unquote crystal clear information? Like, why is this organization allowed to still exist on campus, first of all? Like, even if you don't want to punish them individually yet, which I can, again, I kind of get it. Because, you know, you need to be fair in the process, blah, blah, blah. But at least make sure that this doesn't happen again by suspending the fraternity. Like, why are they allowed to continue to exist? Like, you think they're not gonna do this again? You think they're now gonna, like, suddenly be better people? And even though nothing happened to them, even though someone died in their hands, like, what even is this? Like, I don't understand. And you know what's really funny? I have found the campus regulations, which says that the students must actively contribute to a safe, decent, and tidy environment. The students must comply with legal provisions. There's also, it says, the students must behave respectfully and polite with regard to persons with whom they will come in contact in the context of their education, also through social network sites and other modern forms of communication. The students must respect the safety and health of all persons with whom they will come into contact in the context of their education and all activities of the institution, and must prevent causing damage or endangering them. This is part of the campus regulations. This is part of what the university upholds the students to. There is another one that says the students must refrain from any form of transgressive behavior, and especially from aggression, violence, threat, harassment, unwanted sexual behavior, and discrimination. So... this is part of the campus regulations, okay? And we know that these people in this group have definitely overstepped their boundaries in this context. So there should be consequences for at least that, no? This is what I don't understand. If you would find someone with weed on them on the campus, they would have been suspended immediately. Like, immediately. There wouldn't even be a discussion about it. But people who let someone die are still allowed to roam around. They have harmed someone in the most... understand, and we have known this for a very long time. Like, it's not like, oh, it's suddenly news. Like, this, again, this happened 2 years ago. And this organization and the people who did this are still there. Without any consequences. Like, with, like, the minimum, not even minimum consequences. It says, Article 123 says... the provisions of disciplinary regulations are without prejudice to the authority of the rector, the vice rectors, the deans, the department chairman, and the heads of service to take all necessary measures to safeguard order with immediate effect in all circumstances, including outside a disciplinary case. This may mean, among other things, that students are temporarily denied access to certain areas or the use of certain facilities. I do not understand why this hasn't been a thing. Also, Article 125 says, sanctions. The sanctions are the warning, denial of the right to be present at official educational contact moments, the temporary suspension and or temporary dismissal, refusal by way of disciplinary measures of permission to register, the definite exclusion or the consulum abundi. Each sanction is motivated and communicated in writing. So, yes, the rector has... the rector, the vice rector, the dean, they all have the authority to act as a judge in this case, at least in the grounds of the university. Saying that you don't is denying responsibility for your own actions that you are taking on your campus for the safety of your students and for the future of those students as well. Just because you refuse to do it, like, that's what I don't like about this letter, because someone cannot be like, oh, like I can't do it, when it's literally within your right to do that. And this has been known for at least a few months. Like, let's say the exact details weren't out 2 years ago. The articles are coming out now. So what are we going to do now? Still nothing so far. So, hooray! Yeah, I think this is ridiculous. I hope with my fullest heart that the university will decide to suspend these individuals, because they do not deserve the right to education if they cannot respect other human lives. I hope that the court has an adequate response to what happened, that these people don't get to just go away with a warning or with a tap on the hand, but that they actually get a punishment which they will serve with remorse and then hopefully reintegrate into society as better people. But first, there needs to be a punishment that is adequate to the crime. And lastly, I just want to say I am so sorry that this happened to Sanda. I want to extend my condolences to his family and his friends. And I hope that this never happens again to anyone. I cannot even imagine the fear and the physical pain that he must have been in. And he deserves justice. Hopefully we can talk about something more delightful, because I think we all need it next week. But I needed to talk about this because I think it's necessary that we criticize whatever happens within our realms, and because otherwise nothing will change. And I do hope that the least that can happen from this case is that moving forward, we don't let this shit happen again. But for that, the authorities and the responsible people at the university have to make the right choices. And so I hope they do. Anyway, have a nice week ahead of you. Stay hydrated, stay healthy, and please respect other human beings.